I'm like, can you just like lay down in the doorway for me? I just kind of need you to lay there so I can kind of visualize to see if the scene will work. And he's like, am I a dead body? And I'm like, well.
Welcome to Not in a Huff with Jackson Huff, where we interview newsmakers, storytellers, and all-around interesting people. Sit back, relax, unless you're driving, and enjoy the show. Here's Jackson.
Hello, hello, hello. I am Jackson Huff. This is Not in a Huff. Thanks so much for joining me. As always, really appreciate it. This week, speaking with Heather Gudenkauf. Now, Heather is a best-selling author. She's written at least 10 books. She's got a new one that recently came out that we're going to talk about. But we're mainly going to talk about the process of writing mysteries. I've talked to plenty of authors in the past. A lot of them have been, you know, writing nonfiction, writing their story, their parents' story, that kind of thing. But occasionally, I actually get the honor of speaking with somebody whose mystery books that I already read. You know, I have an extended drive to work each morning. I like to listen to the audiobooks, and last week was all about my favorite audiobook narrator. So this week, just another amazing author that writes mystery books. And the reason I wanted to have her on, because she writes them from a lot different perspective than a lot of people. You know, there's a lot of authors that maybe write something from present day, and then there's a secondary story from 30 years ago, and they just intertwine, and eventually they tie together. And Heather does that. The book that I recently read, she did just that, but it had several different timelines going. But she wrote a book at one point called Before She Was Found. And I read that one probably a year and a half, 2 years ago. And that one just really, really amazed me because it had several different timelines. It had different perspectives. It had you reading the psychiatric journals of one character, the high school diary of another, emails, all this she was able to make into a cohesive story, to understand where everyone was coming from, and eventually solve a mystery. And that was a missing little girl and some battered other children. And it was quite the story. I think it takes a lot to be able to come up with these stories, but then it takes so much more to be able to, in the book, have so many different mediums and still make it all make sense. So I knew I needed to have Heather on. I really enjoyed our conversation. We kind of start with our love of women's basketball. She is from Iowa. Of course, that's where the great Caitlin Clark is from, and I am in Indiana, so of course we are reaping the benefits of her talent now with the Fever, so we'll talk a little bit about that, but we'll quickly get to just her journey as an author, how she writes these stories to be cohesive with so many different things going on. She gives advice to other authors should they ever want to put a book out there. I think you're really going to enjoy this one. Here is Heather Gudenkauf. Ms. Gudenkauf, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for joining me. Let's you do the heavy lifting to start. Just introduce yourself.
Yeah, well, I'm Heather Gudenkauf. I'm the New York Times USA Today bestselling author of 10 thrillers, including my latest, which is Everyone Is Watching. I live in the beautiful state of Iowa with my family and a very spoiled German short hair pointer named Lolo. And I'm thrilled to be here with you tonight.
I'm thrilled to have you. And you kind of already, you've already addressed the thing that I wanted to talk about first. You're from Iowa. A lot of your books are set in Iowa. I've seen you kind of comment and like some of Caitlin Clark's messaging. I'm in Indiana. I'm wearing my Caitlin Clark jersey for you. It's my 22 Caitlin Clark jersey. So I guess I gotta thank you as a Hawkeye fan for giving us Caitlin Clark, right?
Yeah, she's fantastic. And I graduated from the University of Iowa. My three kids graduated from the U University of Iowa, so we bleed black and gold through and through. And I really have always been a fan of basketball, and it has just been so much fun to see Caitlin and her teammates because they were a phenomenal team, and to know that she's in Indiana with the Fever, and they've taken such good care of her. And, being on the world stage is not easy, I'm sure. And it's just been so much fun to see the sport of basketball grow along with Caitlin and with all the other players. I am an Indiana Fever fan for life. I do not miss a game.
I love it. Have you been able to come and watch any games?
No, not yet. And that is on my bucket list for sure. It would be really a highlight to be able to watch the fantastic team play for sure.
Well, yeah. Well, this isn't just a podcast about sports, but if you're ever in Indianapolis, let us know. I live 10 minutes from the arena, and we go quite frequently, so it's always a good time for sure.
Absolutely. I'm on every single one of my birthday list, my Christmas list, every list I have. So hopefully we can get there one of
I
these.
like it. I like it. The last thing I'll say about the Hawkeyes is I had a series in this podcast where I talked to college athletes in gymnastics and soccer, basketball, all kinds of different things. So I reached out to a lot of collegiate athletes, and a large chunk of them actually came from Iowa. So you've got friendly athletes. What I'll tell you though is I'm happy that they're so friendly, but I did go to IU, so I can't really say a ton positive otherwise about Iowa, but we'll leave it there.
I totally understand that. You've got to be loyal to your team. I totally get that.
Well, let's actually get back to your writing, and I want to kind of start at the very beginning. And what I guess what inspired you to be a writer? Where was that passion first created?
For me, for most of my life, I've loved reading and books, but it hadn't always been that way. I was, a kid who really struggled with school in the beginning. I was someone who was always behind, and school was difficult for me. And it wasn't until the middle of my first grade year that it was discovered that I had a profound hearing loss. And so it started to make sense as to why I was so far behind my classmates in all areas. But once that was diagnosed and once I got hearing aids, it was like the whole world opened up and reading just clicked for me. And from then on, I was a huge fan and just couldn't get enough of books. And that has been stayed with me my entire life, but it wasn't really until I've always loved writing. I'm someone who always had kept journals. I took I was a part of the high school newspaper. In college, I took as many writing classes as I could, but my path really was as an educator, and I wanted to be a teacher. And that's what I did. So I became an elementary education teacher. Loved every minute of it. But I also knew I had a story in me to tell. I knew I wanted to write something, and I had this idea for a story. And I'd been teaching for several years at that time, and was teaching third grade. And my children were school age, but I just had this burning need to tell this story, and so I bought a journal and started writing a very rough draft of what ultimately became my first book, The Way to Silence. And I finished that up over the summer and loved it. I loved the process of it. I loved getting lost in the story. And eventually that book got published, and I've never looked back.
I love that. And when you were talking about how I guess you wrote a rough draft of your first book, how did you find your genre? Is it something that you have always enjoyed reading yourself? Is it something that just kind of poured out of you? Is it something that you knew other people would like? A nice little beautiful combination of the both of all of it? Or how did you kind of pick what you wanted to write?
And when I first started, I didn't really think so much in genre, except that I've always loved mysteries. That is something in regard to the books that I've read, and I love all genres. I'll read anything you put in front of me. But the idea of a mystery and a puzzle that you have to solve, I really like that idea. So that's kind of where I've landed squarely in the thriller mystery genre. And it's part of that is that putting together the puzzle pieces for other readers because I enjoy that part of reading so much. But also, I think in regard to genre, there's so many crossovers in so many books and in many books that I love to explore. For me, and we talked a little bit about this, the setting is so important to me, and that's why I include, Iowa in just about every one of my books, or in every one of my books in some way, and the landscape and describing it. And because I for me I feel like setting is another character in the book, and I like to bring the reader into the story by giving them that setting and describing it and helping them to feel like they're right there with me in the story.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people because I've talked to a lot of authors. And I've heard a lot of them mention, that setting is another character of the book, just like you mentioned. And I've talked to people who write about the Texas Hill Country, people who write about the deserts of Arizona. I feel like a lot of people, when they think of Iowa, they don't necessarily know exactly what the setting is. So what about the Iowa setting, I guess, draws you so much into to including it in all your books?
I think most people come to Iowa because they have a relative here, if they come, and it's not really a destination for many people. And it's often thought of as flat with lots of corn, lots of farmland, which is partly true. But if you get the chance to visit Iowa, you'll also find that, it's got the Mississippi River on one side, and it's got the Missouri River on the other. It's got bluffs and rolling hills, and it has caves, and it's really a varied, varied landscape, and it's very beautiful. And so, I want people to know that. And on top of that, the people you talked about, the nice athletes from Iowa. People in Iowa genuinely are very, very nice, friendly folks. And I like to work that idea into the stories as well. But my books are thrillers, so there's got to be a bad guy here or there, and some intrigue and suspense that way. But it's my little way of sharing my part of the world with others.
Yeah, I don't feel like Iowa's too different from Indiana. You're only a state away. We've got the Hoosier hospitality and the corn as well. There's our amusement park is their slogan is there's more than corn in Indiana. So of course we do that too. But no, I've been to Iowa many times. I see the beauty in the landscape and the people, just like you said. So I like that a lot. I guess I want to ask you another question when it comes to the early process. So again, this isn't a book club podcast. It's not one that I exclusively talk to authors, but I've talked to a lot. And it seems like when they're first starting, they've got kind of two different, it's two different mindsets that they really want to write something, but they struggle a lot just to get it all down. They get it on paper, make it make sense. And then I have the other side of things where it's just flowing out of them. And the hardest part for them was finding a publisher who wants anything to do with reading from a new author. So what was the hardest part for you? Was it kind of getting things down and making it make sense? Or was it, I had that down just fine, but then where anybody else would actually look at it?
Yeah. Well, every book is different, every project. For my first one, I really had this story almost fully formed in my head that I wanted to tell. And it's just, The Way to Silence. It's about two young girls who go into the woods, and only one comes out, and she doesn't talk. And so it's a mystery surrounding her disappearance and her family's search for the other little girl. And the story really just flowed out of me over the summer. That doesn't mean it was fully and completely and well done at that point, because there was a lot of revising that went into it. But it really did flow quite easily for me. And the publishing journey is very different for everyone. For me, I set the manuscript aside because I was teaching at the time, and I had to get my classroom ready for the coming school year. So I stuck it in a drawer. I didn't know what to do with it because I didn't come from a publishing world in any sense of the word. But at winter break, I pulled it out again, looked at it, and I always have told my students, you know, you need to dream big. You need to, you know, go for it, follow your dreams. And I thought that that counted for me as well. And so I got a book called The Writer's Market, looked through it, which is a listing of all the different literary agencies and publishers in North America. And it's updated every year. And I got the book and I searched for literary agents that represented the kind of books I liked. And I thought I'd start with one. I sent the first 50 pages off. And a few weeks later, I had a letter back in the mail asking to see the rest of the manuscript, which was incredible to me. I couldn't believe it. I sent the rest of the manuscript off to her and waited and waited and waited because you learn very quickly in publishing, nothing moves quickly. And I got discouraged. I thought, well, maybe this isn't going to happen. But I got the nerve up and I called New York and I said, this is Heather from Iowa. Like I'm the only Heather in the state of Iowa, but she figured out who I was and said, yes, I really enjoyed your story. And I think we can work together, but it needs work. And so, with this agent, we spent the next year and a half getting the book into really good shape. And after that year and a half, we sent it out to publishers. And that's when the rejection letters started coming in. So my agent would send out a manuscript or two, wait for feedback. And for many months, it was rejections. And so I get copies of those letters too, which keeps you very humble. But after a year and a half, there was a publisher that wanted to take me on. And that's where, you know, I've been for all intents and purposes with that same publishing family since the beginning, and have really found my home there.
Yeah, I think that just speaks to the strength of your work because, you know, a lot of times I hear the story both ways where they can't find an agent. It takes them a year to find an agent, and then they finally find an agent, and then it takes another year to find a publisher. Sometimes they get dropped by one agent. So I feel like you, at least you cut it down just a little bit by having a strong story to begin with, it seems like.
Yeah, you know, I really think the stars aligned for me for some reason in that sense, and that I've been surrounded by this core of really, really encouraging, supportive people, including my agent, my publisher, the editors I've had along the way, including the one I've had for my last, 7 books. And, I'm really grateful for that because publishing, for as slow as it moves, it also changes very quickly and people move and situations change. So I feel very fortunate to have this kind of solid base that I can call my home base in regard to my writing family, I would say.
Yeah. And I want to get to the writing style of your books. But before we get to that, I want to ask just the process for you. You're quite a few books in. So what does it look like when you're trying to create a new book? You do have a publisher, so obviously you may be working towards certain deadlines as well. But what's that look like? Are you somebody who, you know, subscribes to the theory I need to write 2 hours a day, or what's it look like for you?
Yeah, so that for me has changed through the years. When I first started writing, my kids were school age, and I worked full time, you know, as in education, and so I just wrote whenever I could, and that would look like getting up early, staying up late. It looked like weekends and summer breaks, like a lot of writers. I mean, a lot of writers have second jobs. And it looked like sitting in the parking lot waiting to pick up my kids from some practice or another. And so I just wrote whenever I could. And, you know, it's been 15 years since my first book was published, going on 16 now. And so my kids are grown. I'm not in the education world anymore. and am able to write full time. So I have a lot more flexibility with that. But, you know, I find that when I'm in the middle of a writing project, I need to write in some way every day. At least have my fingers in the story in some way to keep the momentum going. For me, and you know, that's my style of writing in the sense of like how I approach a novel has evolved over the years as well. You know, in the writing world, there are really two types of writers, and you know, it's kind of a continuum as well. But we have the plotters who, you know, outline their books, they color code everything, they have spreadsheets, and they know where they're going when they sit down in front of the computer. They have this path laid out. And then we have the pantsers, who are writers that write by the seat of their pants. And I was squarely in that second group for many years. Like, I would have an idea for a story. I'd have some characters, I would jot down some ideas, a summary, but then I just start writing. And, you know, that has worked for me, but I've written myself into many, many tough situations where I have to pull myself out of, and you know, heavy revisions, which is par for the course for me. But finally, you know, with this book that will be coming out next year, I thought, you know, I'm going to try something different. And so I really plotted it out. I had the spreadsheet, I had the outline, and I really have to admit, I like it. I like having that roadmap in front of me. What I didn't want to lose was, you know, those moments as a writer when that aha comes to you and you surprise yourself as you're writing, and an idea or a, you know, a thought comes that really sparks the book. And I was afraid I was going to lose that by, you know, scripting what my day was going to look like, but I found that those still come, and I'm glad for that. So we'll see what people think of my next one. You know, the one that I've really outlined, but I have to say, I still do a lot of heavy revisions. That's just kind of the writer I am. I describe myself as I write ugly, and I get everything on the page, and the good, the bad, the ugly, and then I go back in and really try to make something more cohesive out of this stuff in front of me.
I gotcha. And you know, being a right by the seat of your pants type of person is extra impressive that you've done that for so long, just given your style. Now, full transparency, I've read two of your books. And you have them behind you, so I appreciate that, because it always just leaves my mind. But I've read Before She Was Found, and I read The Overnight Guest. Those are the two that I've read. And both of them, and I believe most of your books are this way, where it you know, it follows several different perspectives and different timelines. So, you know, you've got something present day, 20 years in the past, that type of thing. So that makes it even more difficult, I feel like, just to go by the seat of your pants. But it sounds like that's what you said that you've done. So what does that look like? Do you write one person's full story out and then another, or are you truly writing it the way that people are reading it?
No, typically and it depends, every book's a little different, but typically I begin where I write it the way people read it. So, you know, if I have one perspective, you know, a character that starts, I'll start with a character, go to the next one. So it's kind of like a baton, like in a relay race, that they pass the story on to one another. I did, though, for The Overnight Guest, which takes place in present day and, you know, two decades earlier. It's kind of a complex story. So I thought I would approach that one a little differently, and it really worked for me. I decided to write the events that took place 20, 25 years before, which happened to take place in the summer. And I wrote those during the summer months, which we know in the Midwest is always very hot and muggy and buggy. And so I focused on a good chunk of the story that's set in that time frame. And then when winter came around, I focused on the winter 20 years later. It's in the middle of this, you know, 100-year blizzard. And That really worked for me. I really liked that. Now, I wasn't able to write the whole story through that way, but I was able to write to a certain point and then weave in the winter months, and it really flowed nicely doing it that way for me. And so, what I found is I guess I really don't have one approach, and that each story is different. Each story needs to be approached in a different way. And I have to figure out what that is as I jump into a new project.
Yeah, and then the Before She Was Found, of course, we only read two, but if all of your books are that I guess complex between the two of them, then I mean that's extra impressive just because from the reviews that I've read, and I agree with it too, it takes a lot to be able to write a book that makes sense with how many different kinds of I guess mediums, like with Before She Was Found. It was journal entries, it was actual just regular writing. I think it was even like a psychologist's files. Like that, how did you go about that? Because that's tough to make it people understand everything happening when there's so many different ways that the information is assimilated.
And that it, with the Before She Was Found, which is the story of a group of preteens, and there's a big mystery surrounding one of them. Three girls go into a train yard, and two come out. One comes out, but she's gravely injured. And that story was very loosely based on, I don't know if you've heard of the Slender Man case, which was a story out of Wisconsin several years ago, where two best friends attacked a third friend. And there was the story about the Slender Man, which was this online entity that they said encouraged them to do these terrible things. Well, the story, this was the kernel of the idea. And so I knew that with having it's an adult book, but I knew by having these younger characters, and as well as their parents, a child psychiatrist, and others, that I needed to express their thoughts, their feelings in different modes. So there is the journal entries of one of the young girls. There is text messages. There is online forums. There is, just first person thoughts of, of the parents who are, grappling with this terrible thing that's happened in their community. And I just found it was a really unique, effective way to tell the story. To help bring the reader along and seeing all these different perspectives and their different way, the different ways of communicating. So I really, really enjoy writing that way. A lot of my books do have those multiple modes, I guess you would call it. Another interesting piece about Before She Was Found, since we're talking about that one, I knew that I needed to talk to, in regard to research, a child psychiatrist. And so I went to the University of Iowa website and looked through, and I found a random one. I knew I wanted to talk to a woman. I emailed her and I explained the story, the premise, and that it was very, the glint of the idea came from this case, the Slender Man case in Wisconsin, but it's completely different. I just wanted to know what her life as a child psychiatrist looked like. What did her day look like? Her education, and that sort of thing. She got back to me very quickly and said, "You're never going to believe this." And she said she, as a medical student, a resident, she worked underneath the forensic psychiatrist who treated and evaluated the girls in that Slender Man case in Wisconsin, which to me just gives me goosebumps every time. Now, of course, she didn't talk to me about that specific case. She wasn't involved in it, and she wouldn't talk about, specific cases at all. But just having that perspective and doing that kind of research where you talk to people who are in, specific fields to help inform my writing is really an important part of what I do as well.
Yeah, I would assume that it does take a lot of research there. And you've already kind of mentioned with your first book and then, the two that we've talked about, but how do you generally get your ideas? Or is it a rip from the headlines type thing? Is it just something that you wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and have to write down, or what's that look like?
Yeah, typically I do get a lot of my ideas from the news, from the newspapers, and something catches my eye and take it in a completely different direction. But that kind of medium with the news and how timely things are, choosing something that catches my eye in that way is typically how I choose the next project.
And are you somebody who is working on one project at a time, or do you have a lot of balls in the air? What's that look like?
Typically, I can only do one thing at a time because do get so immersed, and I'm kind of a messy writer. So typically I work on one project at a time. I do have a, while I'm working on one book, I do have a running list of ideas for the next one. So, that's in the back of my mind, but I don't put a lot of thought into that until I, finished at least a good solid first draft of my book that I'm currently working on. I can read like four books at a time, but I cannot write more than one book at a time. That's just, I'm too invested and involved in the characters and the story that I'm working on.
Yeah, and this is a question, of course, you have to ask all mystery writers. It's a silly question because, of course, it's just your, the art of doing things and being creative. But what does your family think about being able to come up with all these gruesome ideas? Do they ever look at you sideways?
Yeah, my poor husband. Yeah, always, always. And I'll come up to him and ask him some random questions. I remember once the poor guy, I'm like, can you just like lay down in the doorway for me? I just kind of need you to lay there so I can kind of visualize to see if the scene will work. And he's like, am I a dead body? And I'm like, well, and so they humor me, a lot of people who know me are a little surprised because I like to think of myself as kind of this soft-spoken, quiet kind of person, and nice and cheerful, and I do have these these dark thoughts that come out in my writing. But and I often get asked, what kind of childhood did you have? And I'm so pleased to say I had a wonderful childhood. My parents, I'm the youngest of six. My parents were wonderful people. And I like to say that, I really grew up in a household where I could express who I was and to explore the things that I was interested in. And they really gave me the confidence to go ahead and be the writer that I am today. And so I owe a lot to them.
Yeah. And I always like to ask too, it's kind of the last question when it comes to the pen on paper aspect of your writing, given I've said it already that, this isn't a book club where we go into deep plots about an individual book. Is there any books that you want to kind of highlight that you want people to check out? Any books that, recently came out, any books that you're particularly proud of, anything you want to highlight?
Yeah, there's something special about each of my books, but my most recent book was a lot of fun. It was a little bit different for me. It's Everyone Is Watching, and it's the story of five strangers who are invited to take part in an over-the-top reality competition series where the grand prize is $10 million. And so they travel to this remote location on a vineyard in wine country. And as the games begin, the challenges become more and more dangerous, even deadly. And as they're playing the games, some secrets that they had thought were long kind of hidden and buried are starting to come to the surface. And the entire world is watching because the games are being live streamed across the world. And so that was really fun to write. I had to create this reality series from the ground up, create these characters who all had these dark secrets. And so it's a very fast paced, fun kind of read. One thing while writing that and, kind of doing my research. So my research, and that's in finger quotes, I, watched a lot of reality TV. So my husband would walk by my office and like peek in, and I'm watching, you know, Big Brother or Survivor or something. And I'm like, it's research, you know, it counts. But, you know, one of the aspects of the book is also the audience perspective of who's watching the show. And, you know, I live in the book world. And so when I'm on social media, it's all the book stuff, and people are very supportive and happy and talking books, and it's all very lovely. But, you know, we both know, and everybody knows how the dark side of social media and how, you know, people really get really dragged, I guess is the best word. And, you know, I've given a lot of talks about this book, everyone is watching, and I always do bring up women's basketball and Caitlin Clark and her basketball colleagues, because here are these 20-year-old women playing basketball, and that's all they wanted to do. And all of a sudden they are thrown into the limelight, and the comments, the horrid comments that people are making about looks, about eyelashes, about you know, the way they play. And all these young women from all these different teams want to do is play basketball, and they have to contend with these armchair warriors behind the keyboard, you know, with a lot to say. And I, you know, I really tried to convey that in the book as well. But yeah, social media, you know, there's a lot of great things about it, but there's a lot of, you know, there's a dark side to that as well.
Yeah, it's a good segue when it comes into, you know, opinions of your books. Have there been any surprises? Of course, you pour yourself into all your books, but have you had any books that you're like, well, I'm not really sure about that, and then it went, you know, people just loved it, and then obviously conversely, where you thought this is really solid and it just didn't do too well. Is there any? Have you had any surprises in your career?
Yeah, I mean, I think every time I see a book, one of my books on a bookshelf in either a bookstore or a library, it's just such a thrill. You know, I never would have thought, like a third grade teacher from Iowa, you know, so that's always a thrill. You know, I've had a couple New York Times bestsellers, which has been a ton of fun, you know, a nice honor. But there's been some books that, you know, have kind of flown under the radar that are really special to me. You know, I'm thinking of Not a Sound, which is the story of a woman who is deafened in an accident. And I have always wanted to write a character who has a hearing loss. And so I thought long and hard about it, because you know, writing from the deaf perspective is could be tricky, because I am hearing, I can hear, but I wanted to really, you know, investigate and you know, write about this amazing character, Amelia, who has to navigate life after this profound injury. And I really loved that. I did a lot of research. I talked to a lot of readers who are deaf, and you know, who gave me wonderful insights and read the book and gave the, you know, their thumbs up, their seal of approval, and that meant a lot to me as well.
Yeah, we've got three more questions, and I think they're relatively complex ones. So the next one's going to be about audiobooks. I've, you know, as somebody who does a podcast and is really big on the audio side of things, as somebody who's interviewed quite a few of kind of the top audiobook readers out there, how much thought on your end goes into the readers of your audiobook? Because I mean, I think that makes it or breaks a book. And I know that, you know, some publishers pick it themselves. Some of them really listen to the authors. What's it look like for you?
Yeah, so for me, over the years, typically what my publisher would do was they would send me an audio recording of a handful of readers, and then I would listen and kind of see if I could match what I think would fit the story, the characters of my book the best. And you know, that's always a nice feeling for an author to be involved in those conversations. And I've been really fortunate with my audiobook readers over the years. And, you know, a couple of my favorites have read my books. Julia Whalen, who's a prolific, phenomenal reader, did Not a Sound. And Love her. And Brittany Presley is another one of my favorites. And she's done, oh my gosh, my last four or five books at least. And so she's really been my go-to over the years. And I, the last several books. So I'm hoping that we can continue that because she really seems to capture my characters perfectly. And there's so many. And I think you're right. I always have a book on my e-reader. I always have, the physical book on my bedside table, and I always have an audiobook going. And it's just so great to get lost in the story and have this narrator just really fully embody the characters of a book. There's nothing like it. It's so much fun.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. So the hardest question that I've got for you is just about and when I talk to authors that they've had success that have those New York Times best-selling books, they have the luxury of kind of stepping back and looking at the industry as a whole. And I've talked to some people who have been New York Times best-selling authors for 30 plus years, and we always talk a little bit about the world of publishing, and a lot of them at this point have said, I've got the fan base. Thank God I have the fan base now where I don't have to play the game. I don't have to worry about deadlines, and I don't have to worry about making sure the publisher loves things. And a lot of people, with the advent of Amazon has kind of taken things into their own hand at this point. So how do you feel about the world of publishing at the moment? Do you feel like that, that traditional model of taking years for people to be discovered still works, or do you think that it's going by the wayside?
Yeah, I think you're right. Publishing has changed a ton, even in when I started querying, so 18 years ago to being published for 15 years, it's changed a ton. What I really love now is there are so many different ways for people to get published, like you mentioned. So people are able to find what works best for them and what's right for them. And never can it be said that less books is better. So the more, that we can get people's work out there in whatever format and whatever way, the better, because that means more people are reading and there's more access to books and literature. I've been very fortunate, that traditional publishing, I found what has worked for me so far. And as I mentioned, I have this kind of core group of support supporters around me that help make that happen. And I have a really close relationship with my agent and with my editor, and the team there, which is really special. But I also know enough about publishing that that may not last forever because things change so quickly. So I'm really embracing that now, and enjoying every moment I have that I get to do this job that I love. I've been so fortunate in my life that I've been able to do two things I love. I've been a teacher and I write. And so I, whatever happens in, my writing career and who I publish with, I will always be a writer, and I will always, try and find a way to get those words down and share them with others, whatever that might look like.
I love that. I'm sure you can't get through an interview without having to answer this question. But for those who are interested in writing, what advice do you have for people starting out?
Yeah, my best advice, and I say this every time, just sit down and write. Don't let the outside world come in. Just write the story that you would like to read or whatever it is you're interested in. Just write it. And worry, don't edit yourself. Don't be critical of what you get down. Just get it down on paper. That's the hardest part. And then you get the opportunity. You can always go back and make the changes and fix it. But, write the story that you want to read. And, you'll be amazed at how the pages start piling up.
Yeah, I love that. How can people catch your books? How can they follow along with you?
Yeah, so you can find me at heathergoodenkoff.com. I am on social media. I'm on Facebook and on Instagram. I'm on TikTok a little bit, on Threads a little bit. I also do a really fun interview series with two other thriller authors called the Killer Author Club, and where we interview every other week, these fantastic thriller writers throughout the world, the worldwide known thriller writers, and we have so much fun with that. You can find us at killerauthorclub.com on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. It's really been a really fun experience to be able to chat with fellow writers in that way. So yeah, so come find me, and I love to catch up with readers and connect with them.
Absolutely. I urge people to do that. All the links to the things that you mentioned will be in the show notes. I really appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. This was a lot of fun.
That was Heather Gudenkauf. Heather, thanks so much for joining me. Those who are listening, thanks for being here. If you're a fan of Heather and just wanted to hear more about her, glad you're here. If you're a longtime listener of this podcast, hope you gained quite a bit from just her journey as an author. Even if you never want to be an author yourself, just learning a little bit about that process and what creates that passion, I thought was really cool. I thought it was really cool just to hear about how she writes these stories. She's able to write such intricate stories with so many different mediums in them, and still kind of do it, I guess, pretty organically. So I really, really enjoyed speaking with her. I urge you to check out the books that I have already read by her, The Overnight Guest and Before She Was Found. She just recently put out Everyone Is Watching, so check out that one as well. I know that she'd really, really appreciate that. If this is your first time listening to this podcast or you haven't already, go follow along with it or subscribe on Spotify or Apple. Leave a 5-star rating on Apple and on Spotify. That helps a ton. Leave a written review on Apple, even more amazing. Go follow along on Facebook, Not in a Huff with Jackson Huff. Go follow along on Instagram and TikTok, Not in a Huff Podcast. Lots of places to follow along. Over 250 guests at this point. Bound to be something that that interests you. I speak to so many amazing people, but we'll see you next week. Take it away, Chris.
This has been Not in a Huff with Jackson Huff. Thank you for listening. Be sure to join us next time, where we will interview another amazing guest who is sure to make you laugh or make you think. Or, hey, maybe even both. But until then, keep being awesome.